Think is made possible in part by Guaranty Bank, using its more than 100 years of business experience to provide financing for small and medium-sized businesses and independent oil and gas producers throughout Texas. By Perot Systems, a technology services company trusted by more than 500 clients worldwide. Perot Systems delivers technology infrastructure services, consulting, application solutions, and business process solutions that enable growth. By Southwest Securities, a nationally recognized regional brokerage firm that's been meeting the needs of Southwest investors for more than 30 years. Southwest Securities is a member of the New York Stock Exchange and SIPC. By the Executive Education Center at the University of Texas at Dallas, providing degree and non-degree programs to help corporate professionals and executives stay ahead. On the web at som.utdallas.edu/executive. And by the valued support of KERA members. Thank you.
Welcome to Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. The reign of King Tut ended more than 3,000 years ago in a place nearly 7,000 miles away. But North Texans have the rare opportunity to see the treasures buried with this boy king without even leaving home. Tutankhamun and the Golden Age of the Pharaohs is open now at the Dallas Museum of Art, which is bracing for record crowds from all over the United States. Dr. Zahi Hawass is in town for the opening of the exhibition. He is Secretary General of Egypt's Supreme Council of Antiquities and author of the exhibition's companion book. Dr. Hawass, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
How did Tut become king at the age of 8 or 9?
Because when his father died, Akhenaten, who the first one who believed in one god, there was no other sons to be around. We believe that because of that he was the only one around, that he became the king at the age of 9.
Is there any doubt whatsoever to Tut's parentage?
I'm heading now. The Egyptian mummy project, and the Egyptian mummy project, I was able to CAT scan the mummy of King Tut, and I did find the mummy of Queen Hatshepsut, which is difficult name of a queen. When I found her mummy, I found out that many people don't know how to pronounce her name. You know, all the public everywhere in Japan and America, they really love to hear about Kilibatra and Nefertiti. But Hatshepsut was an important queen. She ruled for 21 years and 9 months. And I found her mummy. And that was big secret, looking in a box that has her liver. In the box, I found one tooth, molar, that has no root. And I had to look at all the unidentified mummies. I found a gap with a root that fits with the molar that I found. Then I'm doing now the family of Tutankhamun. Using the CAT scan machine and DNA lab, we built the only two DNA labs in the world that only made for mummies. Then now we put all the mummies under the CAT scan machine and take samples from King Tut's and the mummy in KV-55, which people believe it's for Akhenaten, and the mummy of Amenhotep III, which some scholars believe that was the father of King Tut. Right. I don't believe so. In my book, I wrote 5 books about King Tut. And every time I found something new about this king. This is why he has magic. Then I did, about 2 weeks ago, I did the study for the fetuses. There were two. One 7 months old, and the other is 5 months old.
So these fetuses were discovered, and
were
no one knew whose they were.
Inside the tomb of King Tut. But In my latest book that I wrote, and it's the official gift book of the exhibit, I excavated the tomb like Howard Carter to find out if he made mistakes or not. Howard Carter, who discovered the tomb, he opened the sarcophagus in 1925, 3 years after discovery, and he found on the mummy the golden mask. He tried to take the golden mask out. He couldn't because it was completely tied because of the resin. And therefore, when he took the golden mask out, he damaged the mummy completely to 18 pieces. Then inside the tomb, Howard Carter found these two fetuses. In my book, I thought that in ancient Egypt, they put these two fetuses to make King Tut reborn in the afterlife clean, like the two fetuses. 7 months did not make any mistakes in his life. Then they want King Tut to live and to reborn again clean. But I do hope now that they could be the children of King Tut. Because if they are, with DNA, will be able to discover the mummy of their mother. Because their mother was the daughter of Queen Nefertiti. If we discover the mummy of Queen Ankh-Es-En Ba'atun, we'll be able to discover the mummy of Queen Nefertiti. Then it's going to be fantastic. I'm planning, when I finish the study of the family of King Tut, I will come back to the States and do the announcement with Discovery Channel. But I am thinking not to do it from New York City, but to do it from Dallas.
Perfect.
Because King Tut is in town.
Yeah. Can you talk about why you chose Dallas of the U.S. cities where you could have put this exhibition?
I will tell you something. I myself have a special relation with Dallas because I came to this town with a black hair 20 years ago. And I brought Ramses the second exhibit. Mm-hmm. And it was so successful at the Fairfax. And I remember I was walking in the streets. With me was Bob Townsend, who was in charge of the exhibit in that time. And we stopped a young lady in the age of 8. Said, young lady, what is big in town? She said, Ramses. Huh. And this is why I found that the people in Dallas, they love the pharaohs and the Egyptian discoveries. And when I came here to lecture 2 years ago, it was at SMU, and the auditorium take 2,300 seats, sold out the lecture. I'm coming back on March 24th. I hope that you can come to my lecture talking about my excavation in the Valley of the Kings, because I'm excavating next door to the tomb of King Tut. And I did discover an opening of a tomb. I did not open it yet because of the heat. We'll start October 6th, the excavation. And we hope that this winter will return the Valley of the Kings to be busy like Howard Carter when he found the tomb of King Tut. I'm also going to talk about the family of King Tut. And, you know, I'm searching even for the tomb of Cleopatra and Mark Antony and revealing the secrets inside the Great Pyramid of Cheops. Many important things are happening now in Egypt. And I'm really, when I found out that we are sending King Tut, I said, we have to talk to Dallas. King Tut has to be in Dallas. Ramses II was seen in Dallas by 1,300,000. I'm sure King Tut is more famous and has magic. And you will learn a lot from this exhibit. Because this, when King Tut came here before, went to 6 cities, he came with 55 objects that was found in his tomb. Howard Carter excavated 5,398 objects.
So lots more to see.
Exactly. But this time, I brought King Tut to town with his family for people to know about Akhenaten, his father, if we believe Akhenaten was his father. Nefertiti. You know, statues about Yuya and Tuya, the golden mask, and the golden coffins. You know, many interesting things that I really believe everyone who will enter this exhibit, he will stand for hours in front of every object because it will capture the hearts of the people because of the magic of King Tut. If you say King Tut, curses, people talk about the curses. You know, when I put the mummy of King Tut, I have a special relation with this king. Because when I went for the first time to examine the mummy with CAT scan machine, and I took the mummy out from the sarcophagus.
That must have been terrifying.
God, I never in my life forget this moment. Looking at the golden boy face to face, I almost had tears. I still now, when I think about this moment, that for me as an archaeologist excavated tombs and temples and made major discoveries. But looking at King Tut, I found the Valley of the Golden Mummies. But looking at the face of this king was a very special moment in my life. But when I took the mummy after that and I put it under the CAT scan machine, a big storm, the machine did stop completely. It was 12 midnight, and I was sitting like this. Say, God, why the machine stopped? It was the first time in my life to think about the curse of Tutankhamun. Because remember, when the tomb was found 3 months after the discovery, Lord Carnarvon died. And people said many stories about him. He died, was beaten by a mosquito, and people said there is curses written in the tomb, which is not true. And for me, when I went to CAT scan the mummy, before I entered the tomb, I was giving an interview to the Japanese TV. A big storm happened, and it was raining. The Japanese crew were running away, saying, the curse of Tutankhamun, the curse of Tutankhamun. Even in my way to the Villa of the Kings, my sister called me. She said, Zahi, my husband is dead. And I began to be scared. But I will tell you something. I never in my life believed in the curse of Tutankhamun or the curse of the pharaohs. You know, one day I was excavating under the ground a tomb about 50 feet under the ground. Then we had to put light. Then I was catching in my left hand a lamp, and I was digging with my axe. Then I saw a statue. Then I pushed the lamp, and the wire was broken. Then the electricity hit me, and I fainted for 1 minute on the ground. When I did wake up, I said to my assistant, you know, if I was dead, everyone will believe in the curse of the pharaohs. But I'm going to tell you something very important. If in this room you have mummies and you have objects, and the room is closed for 3,000 years, the room will contain germs that you cannot see. And this is why archaeologists, when they enter quickly to the tomb, these germs can hit them and they die. It can happen to anyone. And this is why, you know, I have been working in archaeology for 35 years now, and actually, when I excavate any tomb, I open it for 1 day until the bad air will go out and the fresh air will go in. And I never shave, because when you shave, things are open here for the germs to hit, and the people die because of that. There is really nothing called the curse of the pharaohs. Even in front, in any tomb, there are some words are saying, if anyone will touch my tomb, he will be eaten by crocodile, the hippo, and the lion. It doesn't mean anything. That's what the Egyptian hoped, that their tomb could be saved for the quest of immortality.
See, when I said it, I thought it would be terrifying. I wouldn't be so much afraid of the curse as afraid that one of your assistants would bump into the mummy and cause damage. Was that something that you worried about at all?
Of course. Mm-hmm. We, as archaeologists, are very careful. If you come to visit Egypt, you should come. You should come and
make
a program. When I'm going to discover, to open this tomb that I found in the Valley of the Kings, going to be big news. I'm really thinking to make one life, 10 minutes life from the tomb after we open it.
What an exciting event.
It will be so exciting. And this is why we in archaeology are very careful. We take, you know, when I take a statue out from the tomb, as if you are holding your child. You keep it safe, you restore it, you clean it. Then my assistant, always very careful. You know, when I discovered this valley called the Valley of the Golden Mummies, I found that this valley contained 10,000 mummies covered with gold. I discovered, until now, only 250 mummies. Then we were so careful of examining every mummy and taking photographs and restoring and do conservation, and it's a kind of a careful, important work, because we are not blunders. We are doing this to preserve history. And if we do preserve history, we keep our future to be safe. And this is why we as archaeologists always have to really look at small things that can reveal many important secrets. I've been excavating all my life. You know, I just came with a suit today.
This is not what you wear when you're excavating.
No. You wear it. I mean, look at, if you go to my website, you know my famous hat. Mm-hmm. We are selling this hat now in the exhibit, because this hat became a part of me and became very important everywhere. mean, if I wear my hat and go with you to the Valley of the Kings, the 5,000 people in the Valley of the Kings will recognize me because of the hat. And when George Lucas came to Cairo, you know, George Lucas is the one who created Indiana Jones.
Sure.
Then he came with his three adopted children, and I had dinner with him. And we're talking about my hat and the difference between my hat and Harrison Ford's hat. Then we thought that we should sell it because many people ask for it. And the money that comes from the sales of this hat goes for the construction of the only children museum in Cairo. And I'm very happy that my hat can be a part of building a museum for children in Cairo.
So do you think it's possible, Tut was forgotten from history for so long, do you think it's possible there's another tomb out there that is as glorious as this one?
I will tell you, and you will know about this. I excavated last November in the area behind King Tut's tomb, okay? And I did concentrate in one area, that between the tomb of Ramses II and the tomb of his son Mer-Imbetah. I believe between them is the tomb of Ramses VIII. I began my excavation. And I found two cuttings. And this cutting coming with stairs down. This looks to me are tombs that were robbed. But at the end of the cliff, I found two huge blocks in an area like this. I brought hundreds of workmen. It took us 3 months to move these huge blocks out. And
we have just seconds left. I hate to leave this a cliffhanger, but you found something. We'll have to find out about this next time.
Okay.
Sounds great. And they can check you out online as well. You've got a website. So thank you so much, Dr. Zawas, for being with us. You can visit the Tutankhamun exhibition at the Dallas Museum of Art through May 17th, and you can purchase those tickets in advance. Just a head-on think, the haunting story told in words and photographs of a decaying border town. First, take a look at this week's arts calendar.
The Art and Seat calendar for the first weekend in October includes a former Good Bad artist, the Big Band, and an Obie Award winner. On stage in Fort Worth, Jubilee Theater celebrates the power of the modern black woman, and the poetically driven for colored girls who have considered suicide when the rainbow is enough. Speaking of girls reigning triumphant, if you're in search of family-friendly, Gats in Arlington offers up Evil Stepsisters, Fairy Godmothers, Dashing Princes and Glass Slippers, and the perennial favorite fairy tale, Cinderella. Opening at Art Space 111, witness the wide open spaces and craggy terrain of the Big Bend on canvas with Dennis Blagg's new show, Back to the Bend. And speaking of Texas talent, come out for former Good Bat Art Collective member and San Antonio-based artist Richie Budd's pranksterish found object sculptures at the Road Agent Gallery in Deep Ellum. For more about these events, join us at artandseek.org, a new website for the arts in North Texas. For Art and Seek, I'm Jeannie Mascoro.
How does life in a Texas border town reflect, shape, and contradict our notions of what it means to be an American? Those questions weave their way through a new book called Border Town, The Odyssey of an American Place. Photographer and rural physician Jeffrey Guskey is here to talk about what he discovered in tiny Roma, Texas. Jeff, welcome to Think.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
The book says that from the beginning, Roma has been neither fully American nor fully Mexican. Can you talk about how that's shaped what it became?
Well, these people have a sense of themselves that I don't even understand, but as an outsider I see that they feel fully American. They're not conflicted about who they are, yet they retain their culture and their language. And it's an American success story that no one knows about.
You went there for the first time looking for nothing more than, I guess, relief from a toothache.
Yeah, that's right. And I had been working on another book at the time, which was inspired initially by KERA. When I heard an author on the Karen Dennard show in 95. And I hit it off with this dentist, great dentist. He was the brother of an intern that I was training when I was doing a temporary stint as a locum tenens ER doc at McAllen Medical Center. And so he did so well that he built a brand new high-tech digital office in America's poorest county, or one of America's poorest counties. His wife knew that I was working on this other series of photographs that became the book Silent Places. And that's how this got started. And then In 2004, after I was 4 years into the project, I was looking for a co-author. And once again, KERA came to the rescue. I was listening to the Glenn Mitchell Show, and I tuned in about halfway through this interview, and this guy being interviewed was so dynamic, and I thought he was from California, and I was ready to get on a plane and go meet him to ask him to join me in this project. Turns out it was Dr. Benjamin Heber Johnson, professor of history at SMU, a few miles away, and we met. I had just finished the Goya Guskey exhibition at the Meadows, which he had seen, and he agreed the first meeting to join me. So, and what Ben discovered is remarkable. A lot of people have felt something when they've gone to Roma. Elia Kazan and John Steinbeck, when they made the movie Viva Zapata, which won Anthony Quinn the first Academy Award for a Mexican-American. The Meadows Foundation has invested heavily in restoring the buildings there. Larry McMurtry has written about Roma. But Ben put together the pieces, which I think now help us to understand this place as the narrative, the missing narrative about Hispanic American identity, which in this year, when we're very conscious about identity and about overcoming stereotypes and prejudice, this is a success story that nobody knows about, and it's remarkable.
So the buildings are being restored, but most of your photographs show the town sort of empty. And I'm wondering about the choice that you made as a photographer to do that.
This is the way that I photograph. I'm an intuitive. And so I'm photographing from here. And when you go to this place, there's something in the air. You feel something. And that's what I try to capture. Sometimes people wonder, where are the people? And I'm tuned into something else, but together with Ben's narrative, it creates a sense of place, and it's almost like you're there. And this is not just a place consisting of Roma, because before 1848, when it became American soil, it was one place with an entire civilization, a European outpost that had been established just across the river, and which you can still touch today. In fact, on Sunday, I was down there with Univision filming a series for fall ratings sweeps, and General Ricardo Sanchez, who headed CENTCOM in the Iraq War several years back, spent the day with us. He was born in Starr County along with his wife. He had no idea about the origins of this place and the people that settled it, his people. When he went to Old Guerrero, which is now a ghost town, it's half underwater because of the Falcon Dam. It's a place that, street after street, you feel an advanced civilization that existed. It has a certain cultivation and sophistication. And so when these people came to America, actually they were here. They were landed gentry, if you will, who had large ranches granted by the King of Spain. They established Roma the week of the treaty, and I personally think that they knew what they were doing, and they embraced American values with optimism. They retained their culture and language, but they became Americans on their own terms.
And what do you think is the future of Roma?
I met with Henry Cisneros a couple weeks ago, and I suggested to him that I think that this is another cradle of European civilization, like a Williamsburg on the southern border. He went nuts over the idea. And so I think that's its future. I think that what the Meadows Foundation began in the late 80s, I believe, I think will continue now, because Hispanic Americans are becoming such an important demographic, such a political and economic power, but they have no place where they can touch their American past, and I think this is it.
It'll be exciting to watch it happen.
Yeah.
Jeff, thank you so much for coming in. The book is called Border Town, The Odyssey of an American Place. It also features essays written by SMU Associate Professor of History Benjamin Heber Johnson. You can visit the Think page of KERA.org to subscribe to free video and audio podcasts of the show. And you can contact us by email addressed to think@KERA.org. My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for being with us, and have a great week.
Think. is made possible in part by Guaranty Bank, using its more than 100 years of business experience to provide financing for small and medium-sized businesses and independent oil and gas producers throughout Texas. By Perot Systems, a technology services company trusted by more than 500 clients worldwide. Perot Systems delivers technology infrastructure services, consulting, application solutions, and business process solutions that enable growth. By Southwest Securities, a nationally recognized regional brokerage firm that's been meeting the needs of Southwest investors for more than 30 years. Southwest Securities is a member of the New York Stock Exchange and SIPC. By the Executive Education Center at the University of Texas at Dallas, providing degree and non-degree programs to help corporate professionals and executives stay ahead. On the web at som.utdallas.edu/executive. And by the valued support of KERA members. Thank you.